Welcome to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Dr. Williams is the author of the acclaimed book, Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together After Child Abuse. And Dr. Gregory is on the senior leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. Dr. Williams travels the United States speaking and training professionals, parents, and victims about the importance of dealing with abuse and personal trauma head-on and not being afraid to break the silence of your own personal pain. Feel free to call in live to tonight's show at 888-627-6008 and speak to Dr. Williams and his guests. Now, here is Dr. Williams.
Well, good evening, good evening. Thank you, Doug. Has anybody ever told you you should be in radio with that voice? And just welcome to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Greg Williams. And I'm just looking out my home windows here on the sun going down on beautiful Houston, Texas. And I just want to welcome you to the program tonight. We have an awesome hour for you. I would like for you to grab a notepad and a pen so you can just kind of jot some things down, because I think we're going to give you some awesome facts and some tips that you can be able to use throughout your week and just get closer to who you are and help you out with whatever you're going through. We're going to have a great show tonight. But first of all, I just want to let you know that if you want to call in to talk to me or to talk to our guests this evening, I would love to hear from you. It's 1-888-627-6008, and would love to have you be part of that. 1-888-627-6008. Next week on Labor Day weekend, we're going to have an awesome show. I just want to kind of preview that with you right now. We have Joel Alch, J-O-A-L-C-H. She's from Dallas, Texas, and has written an awesome book called The Lemon Tree, Memoirs of Courage. And I believe Joe saw me on the ABC TV up there in Dallas when I was being interviewed. She was sitting in her home watching, and she immediately reached out to me via the internet and email, and we touched base, and we're going to have her on as a guest next week, so you don't want to miss that one. Has an awesome book that we're going to tell you about. Before we get into our guest tonight, I have some things, just 9 or 10 things that I just kind of want. I wanted to get to this last week and didn't, because I just thought this was awesome. Just to understand, 9 or 10 everyday things that may just reveal too much about your character. So just these will be kind of fun, but just to see how you fit into this character issue and who we really are. So number one, what do you think when someone takes your parking spot at the mall? What goes through your mind? How do you react? How do you respond to that? What's going on inside of you when that very moment takes place at the time? Okay, here's one that gets me. Number two, how do you react when the internet is slow? Uh-oh. The Holy Spirit's convicting me now. How do you react when your internet is slow? Number three, this is a good one. The gap between what you think and what you say when someone compliments you. You know, I had a big problem with this, and I'm just now starting to get a grasp of this. But when somebody comes up to you and say, hey, great looking jacket or a great necktie or whatever, I used to automatically downplay that and go, oh, well, I got that necktie just as the casket lid was being closed on a visitation I was at last week. And I always made a joke about it. When somebody would compliment me on a speech or on a sermon, I would always say, oh, well, I picked that up at Walmart on the clearance rack, and I downplayed it. And I think sometimes when people compliment you, how you react may indicate to you if you have something wrong with your character and you may need a little help in that area. True humility is not thinking less of yourself, it's just simply thinking of yourself less. Okay? How do you respond to critics? So here we, to really find out your character and who you're really made of, a lot of times is indicated by how you handle praise, applause, and then how you handle critics. How do you respond? Even if you throw away most of what a critic says, you don't have to throw away the learning that was in what they said. Number five, what you tell yourself when you make a mistake. This one gets my goat too. That's why these 9 or 10 things are really important to me. But when I make a mistake, sometimes I go, well, I expected that. I knew I'd mess that up. I knew I was going to do that. And that's important that mistakes are tremendous opportunity to learn, and they rarely are fatal. And one of the keys to success in life is not how many times you get knocked down, but it's how many times you get up. To be successful, you have to be able to get up one more time than what you were knocked down. Number six, how you react when someone overfills the trash at the house and doesn't take it out. Uh-oh, husbands, wives, there's a character flaw right there. How do you react with that? What's your overcoming problem that you may have that's revealing a character situation in you? Here's one that is so relevant right now. Your social media voice. Yeah, you have a voice on social media. What is it? What is it? Your social media voice may reveal who you really are, but is it who you're really called to be? And then number eight, how do you react when other people's social media voice has you involved on it? How do you react to that? Because your voice is owned, and you need to make sure you have that label that you want it to be for the world. And number nine, I think this was awesome and it's really deep, but it's so simple and funny. A character revealing clue is how you return the shopping cart at your grocery store or Walmart can really reveal the character that you really are. And before I bring on our next guest, the last one I want to kind of throw in here, since we had a little wager on the Texans shootout the other night with Thursday night football between the Dallas Cowboys and the Houston Texans, a character flaw or the character revealing of how you handle when your team wins by 34 to nothing. And then another character situation and revealing possibility could be how do you react when your team loses 34 to zero on a football game that is just a fun Houston Texan and Dallas Cowboys game. And I make it light of that, but I just want to kind of set back and introduce to you one of my dear friends, and that is Dr. Lauren Pitts. She is a family therapist, provides family therapy services to many individuals, couples, families, groups. She coordinates services related to education, employment, housing, behavioral health, medical, financial needs, along with professional development and consultation. She also serves the U.S. Department of State Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs and the Institute of International Education as a Fulbright alumni ambassador, and that is an awesome honor. She also has a wonderful blog talk radio show called House Talk with Dr. Lauren Pitts, and I have been on her show. Matter of fact, was on her show Thursday night, and we just have a great time every time we get an opportunity to talk and have conversations. She's real, She's genuine. She's authentic. She's raw. And I want to remind Dr. Pitts to not be too raw tonight. But anyway, I just want to welcome Dr. Pitts, and she has an awesome new book that's available right now. And I promised her last week I would buy it and read it. Dr. Pitts, I have bought it and read it twice. And that book is called The Queen Within: Becoming the Woman God Intended. Dr. Pitts, welcome to Breaking the Silence tonight. And it's an
Oh my
honor to have
goodness,
you with us.
Greg, you're too much. Thank you, thank you, thank you so much for having me. And I promise I totally will behave myself tonight. I won't even go there about my Dallas Cowboys. You notice I did not text you after the game.
I turned
I
my
said,
phone
I'm
off
not,
along with
I,
my TV.
I said, I'm not going to, you know, I really don't. I'm not one of those fans that rubs it in. I was really
Well, I would
pleased.
like to say right up front that it's amazing that you had to come all the way to Texas to find a team to really enjoy, though. So I'll take the pride in the awesome state that I live in. Even though it's not Houston, Texans
go
that
ahead
won, but.
and throw that shade on the Philadelphia Eagles, because Lord knows I am in Eagles country. I get so sick and tired of seeing and hearing about those birds. It's not even funny. But yes, thank you so very much for having me, and for such an amazing introduction. I truly appreciate it, and I honestly count you as a dear friend and colleague, and it really is an honor and a privilege to share the airwaves with you all the times you've been on House Talk, and now tonight, the second week of your own show. It's a privilege and an honor.
Well, I knew I wanted to get you in on the first one or two, and I'm glad you agreed to that. And it's a Sunday night, so hopefully there's not any Sunday night football that you're missing. I believe there is.
No, not yet.
So
not yet.
if you start screaming or something in the middle of the interview, I'll understand. But I really want to, and Doctor, I did read your book, and I read it through again this afternoon just so I would be refreshed.
Oh, my goodness.
Awesome book, and
I
want to just tell everybody that even though it's called The Queen Within, it's not just for women. I got a lot out of this, and tell me, because it's an autobiography, but tell me mm-hmm. what caused you to write it. What was inside of you that you wanted to get that all down on paper, and what are you hoping to accomplish with this book?
You know, it was an act of healing for me. Mm. And it was many, many years ago that I was reading a story in Essence magazine, and the editorial manager or director at that time, Susan L. Taylor, there was a quote in there from her where she said, the more you heal others, you heal yourself, or something to that effect.
Yeah.
And that just resonated with me. And when I thought about all of the heartache and the pain and the suffering that I was experiencing, the internal turmoil about so many things that had occurred in my life and so many things that I didn't understand, I remember at a very young age, Dr. Greg, thinking that, you know what, I don't want anybody to have to know this pain.
Wow.
And it was I want to say eighth grade, ninth grade, when one of my English teachers told me the healing virtue that comes through writing. So I started writing. I mean, I wrote everything. I wrote poems. I wrote my thoughts, my feelings, everything. I
Wow.
started writing, and I started journaling, and I realized, I was like, wait a minute, I'm on to something here. If the writing has the ability to help me heal, you know, maybe it can be a blessing and an encouragement to other people. And it was interesting because in my youth and you know, at the crux of my spiritual immaturity, well, I'd say I was like 15 or 16 at the time, and I don't know if I reference it in the book, but I went up for altar call at the church, and I remember praying that I wanted God to make me, to my family, my friends, to the community, and to the world, what Moses was to the children of Israel.
Whoa.
Now, of course, insanity, right? I look back now, and I'm like, what the heck was you thinking? Who prayed that? You know? I didn't know. I say all that to say that even with all of the violation that I had experienced in my life to that point, I still prayed that very sincere prayer from the innocence and purity of a child's heart, because as I looked around every day, I always felt like the black sheep in my family. I always felt like there was something different about me, and I believe that there was more and different and better that life had to offer than what I saw going on around me every day. And it wasn't that I was from a bad family or for a bad area or anything like that. Like, I just felt like there was something more. And then it was like this light bulb went on that, wait a minute, if I'm feeling this way, there's got to be other people that are feeling this way too. And then the biggest thing is that particularly in my younger years, I felt very silenced. I didn't have that freedom to just talk openly and honestly about what I was thinking, about what I was feeling, about how life had happened to me and what it was doing to me internally. And I was a hostage in my own body and in my own mind. And as I began to write and grow and mature and started to, you know, went away to college and started to meet other people, I realized that, wait, I'm not alone on this island. There are a whole lot of people that are experiencing the same thing that I'm experiencing. And then in undergrad, my academic advisor, thank God, he saw something in me that I hadn't seen in myself. And I tell people, he threw me in front of the bus. And what I mean by that is he got this brilliant idea that he was going to get a group of us together. It was a program that he named the Cultural Enrichment Program, and he took many of the troubled youth that he was advising, and he required us to start mentoring troubled youth in our community that were in middle school. And that was like, okay, I'm on to something here. I have the ability to take all this craziness that's going on in my life and somehow use it to help other people.
Yeah, to Dr. Pitts, you mentioned that you felt like a hostage in your own environment, and you didn't have a chance to express yourself, or almost like you didn't have a voice. And it's unbelievable how parallel some of what you've dealt with was the same thing I dealt with as a youngster too. So tell me, did the writing and the journaling, did that become your voice? Is that how you got some of that out, or did you just bottle it all up and now that's why you're doing what you're doing now? How did you find your voice? Did the journaling help?
The journaling helped. I didn't, so, you know, back then I didn't share anything that was in my journal with anybody.
Right.
So it was just sort of like my own emotional purging. And as I was 18 the first time I sought professional help for all of the emotional baggage that I was carrying around. And one of the things that my therapist at the time had encouraged me to do was to continue journaling. But I never shared it with anybody.
You're 18 years old. You already mentioned that you've gone to a therapist. 18 years old, you have emotional baggage. What in the world, doctor, happened to you? What was the pain? What was the heartbreak? What was the trauma that caused you to go even think about going to a therapist at 18 years old?
Yeah. Well, I had never met my biological father. I'll be 52 in November. I've still never met him. The information that I have with him about him is probably the equivalent of a quarter of a page, you know, maybe five or six sentences as far as the information that I have on him. And my mother was a teenager when she got pregnant with me, and for many, many years, it really, our relationship was so strained, and it was so volatile, and it was very, very, very unhealthy. She was emotionally and physically abusive back then, and, you know, I tell people oftentimes, the corporal punishment that is used on children today that will get you arrested and thrown in jail, multiply that times 10, 15, 20.
Right.
And
yeah.
that was the corporal punishment that I was subjected to growing up. But back then it wasn't considered abuse. Back then it
That's
was
right.
considered discipline.
Yeah, it was
but
parody.
It was my spirit.
Yeah.
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 yeah. It for me, and I can't speak for anybody else, you know, there's a whole lot of folk that would say, oh, you know, get over it. It was what it was as a sign of the times. But for me, with the father absence, having a very horribly strained relationship with my mom, and then factoring in that she just, like, I know now at 51, Dr. Greg, that she did the best that she could for who she was and where she was in her life at that point in time. But back then, it's like, you know, I got beat on for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. That was her solution for everything, was to lay on of hands.
And hey, I tell you what, Dr. Pitts, we're getting ready to come up on a break. And
while
we both take a breath here, I want to, when I come back after the break, I want to just throw out the question now to let you think about it for the next minute and a half. During all of this that you was going through as a child, you not knowing your biological father, your mother doing what she did with the discipline, you going to the therapist at 18 years old. Here's the question I'm going to ask when we come back after the break. Where was God during all that time? And I'm going to ask you that just as we come back. Doug, take us to our first break, and we'll see you right on the other side. And thank you for joining us for Breaking the Silence. We'll talk to you in about another minute.
From HCI Publishing, that brought you the international bestsellers, A Child Called It, and the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, comes the latest book by Dr. Gregory Williams, Shattered by the Darkness. This book describes the horrific abuse that Dr. Williams suffered at the hands of his father for over 12 years, and the damaging effect of keeping everything silent about that abuse for 30 years. If you're looking for that book that you can't put down, then pick up a copy of Shattered by the Darkness by Dr. Gregory Williams at all Barnes & Noble stores, Amazon, and Books A Million. Now, back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams.
All right. Thank you, Doug. I appreciate that. I want to just let you know that if you want to call in and ask a question for myself or Dr. Pitts, feel free to call at 888-627-6008. And Dr. Pitts has written an awesome book. Everybody needs to get this. The Queen Within, Becoming the Woman God Intended. And it has a lot of awesome scripture verses. There's a portion about halfway through the book, Dr. Pitts, that you threw in there, called Emergency Numbers to Dial, something on that order.
Mm-hmm.
It's worth the price of the book for that one page. Just want to let you know as a reference when you're stressed, and it just keeps going on. I just love that. That was awesome. So make sure you pick that up.
Thank you, doctor,
they can get that right on Amazon, right? That's where I got mine. Is that the best place?
Make sure, Ken.
Okay. So back to this story, which is a fascinating story. I have so many questions for you.
Okay.
Where was God when you was going through all of this?
There was just a couple more things that I wanted to tell you, and then I'll get to that because it's all connected.
Sure,
so
go ahead.
Along with the paternal absence and the abuse at the hands of my mother, you know, also factored in there, you and I have endless conversations about ACEs, adverse childhood experiences.
Okay.
You know, there was a point in time where my stepfather ended up having to be incarcerated for many, many years, and all of the trauma that came with that, you know, being sexually abused and molested by a family member for several years. And I tell you, Dr. Greg, I thought God had forgotten about me. And it's an interesting dichotomy because having been, air quotes, churched my whole life, for as long as I can remember, you know, Sunday school and vacation Bible school and church and, you know, all things church activities, I was reared, you know, my grandparents and my mom and when my stepfather came into the picture, you know, Pentecostal holiness upbringing. So in on the surface, or so I thought, God was definitely always present in my life. I've often said to people, and I believe I stated it in the book, that the best thing that my family ever did was making sure that I knew who the Holy Trinity was. Wow. And even though I thought, how can God be present with all of this horrible stuff that I'm going through? Clearly he's forgotten me. I'm not worthy of being loved, respected, valued, appreciated, or anything. You know, I honestly took ownership, if you will, of every horrible thing that happened to me, and I developed this internal narrative that somehow, some way, this God that I love so much and that I had been introduced to was allowing me to be punished because I wasn't smart enough, I wasn't pretty enough, because I was born out of wedlock, because, you know, I was a result of my mom's indiscretions and my biological father's indiscretions and all of those things. But what I realized as I got older and started to mature, and you know, the craziness was still going on, but as I continued to grow spiritually, I realized that he was there all along. Looking back now in retrospect, what is more clear to me than my own name is that the moment of insanity that I prayed that prayer about being to my family, friends, community, and to the world what Moses was to the children of Israel, I invited the pruning and the purging and the preparation to come in. How could you ever possibly walk in the fullness of God's purpose for your life without the preparation? And what I realized is that, or what I believe, I'll put it like this, what I believe is that that thought was in my heart, Dr. Greg, because God planted it there. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like it was his way of saying, this is my purpose for your life, and oh, by the way, you're going to go through sheer hell as I prepare you to walk in the fullness of who I've purposed you to be, but I'm right here with you all along. And every single solitary time, I found myself questioning whether or not I was forgotten by God, whether or not I was loved by God, whether or not he had a purpose for my life. Here comes the prophetic word or a person or a sermon or something to remind me that here I am.
You mean these things aren't just by chance? It's not just an accident that you know, it just doesn't happen? Or this is all God directing perfect timing people in your life to fulfill your destiny? Is that what you're saying?
It is. It is what I'm saying. And then to add on that, you know, part of it, and I've said this often, and people always look at me like I'm crazy when I say, you know, God is not up in the heavens saying, oh my goodness, I can't believe she did that. What was you know what I mean? He's not putting, like, his hands over his spiritual lips and saying, do you see what she did? So nothing that I've said or done or ever experienced is a surprise to him. And what that means is that he allowed it. There have been so many times in my life, Dr. Greg, where I have been in God's permissible will as opposed to his perfected will because of my own disobedience, because of my own brokenness, because of my own immaturity, irresponsibility, and rebellion, and he allowed it. But my grandmother always said, what doesn't kill you will make you stronger.
Yeah, and he can actually use those instances where we may have not fulfilled what he wanted us to do. We went to the side street, and we really stayed over there longer than we did or should have.
Right.
And
out,
he'll use those experiences to touch people that we would have never been able to touch unless we had those experiences. God is so good.
Yeah. He is. People don't want to know about what you heard. They want to know about what you know. And and the Queen Within was written from that firsthand. You know what? Did you say, you know, I'm guilty. Guilty, Your Honor. I'm raw. I really, really am. But guess what, Dr. Greg? My life has been raw. And and I, you know, yes, I do admit there's times that I can tone it down because I get really, really hyper and passionate about stuff. The flip side of that, though, is that passion and that fire is what my life has been, good, bad, and indifferent. And I feel like if I sugarcoat it and make it all mamby-pamby and politically correct and all polished, dignified, and refined, people are going to be like, okay, and? But it was raw. It happened to me. Dr. Greg, life has not been kind in a lot of ways.
And people respond to you because of that rawness, though. They respond.
Yeah.
They are attracted to that.
Yeah, yeah.
Fantastic, fantastic. So now, after you're 18 and you start getting involved and you get married, and then that I think is unsuccessful per se, and then there's a line in your book that I wrote down, and I wanted to make sure our listeners heard this, because I have a feeling there's hundreds of people, men and women, that are sitting here listening to this show tonight that feel this very statement that you said in the book, and I wrote it down like this. You said you became a magnet for abusive men. Now, what kind of wisdom can you tell our listeners who may feel they have that same magnet inside of them for toxic people to be attracted to them that's not good for them? What did you learn out of that, and how did you overcome that?
I learned that a major, if not the primary reason why I was attracting all of these individuals, first and foremost, was because they validated the low opinion that I had of myself.
Oh, wait, and, okay. Expound on that. Expound on that, please, because I want to hear that. That was so powerful in your book.
Yeah.
Because of your low self-esteem, they validated that. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was a product of my ACEs, and as a result of that, I didn't feel like I was worthy of love, respect, adoration. I didn't feel like I was worthy of anything positive. So because that was my internal narrative, it oozed from every fiber of my being. And as a result of that, my internal narrative said, well, you don't deserve any of that. So it governed how I live my life and the people that I connected with, and the people that I connected with validated that low opinion that I had of myself. Now, what I learned later on is that if I had been able to properly accept God's love for me, then I would have been able to love myself properly, and I would not have stood for all of the abuse and the maltreatment that I allowed myself to be subjected to. The very foundation of the matter is I didn't believe that I was worthy of God's love either, and the devil convinced me that, why on earth would you think that God loves you? I mean, your biological father, you know how the devil does, right? He tells you all of these lies, and one of my favorite movies is Pretty Woman, and there's a scene in the movie where she says the bad stuff is easier to believe. Well, that's exactly what happened to me. The bad stuff was easier to believe. I just didn't think that I was worthy of God's love. I didn't think that I was worthy of being valued, respected, appreciated, nothing. I just didn't. So as a result, I destroyed the positive relationships that I had. The one that always stands out the most is my son's father. He's an amazing man. He's not a perfect man, but he's an amazing man, and he was a godsend for me in our youth that I just did not have the maturity or the wholeness to receive him for the blessing that he was. He never treated me, Dr. Greg, based on all of the crazy behavior that I was demonstrating. He treated me based on the woman that I am today. He always recognized me for who I was going to become. But because I didn't believe that I was going to become who I am today and who God continues to transform me into, I couldn't receive it. So I destroyed that relationship and others along the way because I couldn't handle it. The wake-up call for me was I've had many therapists over the years. I was residing in Tallahassee, Florida at the time, and I can't even tell you, Dr. Greg, what my therapist said to me. I can just tell you that I ended up going far beyond my scheduled session, and I was curled up in the floor in the fetal position, sobbing uncontrollably for what seemed like hours. And whatever it was she said that day, I had my breakthrough. And that was, oh goodness, I lived in Tallahassee from 2000 to 2004. So it hasn't been that long ago.
Right,
it
right.
has not been that long ago since I got that breakthrough. And it was just like, okay, wait a minute. God loves you. Yes, you've been through all of these things, but God loves you. And because God loves you, you can love and forgive yourself, and you can start to be deliberate and intentional in receiving that healthy, whole love that he has for you.
That is so good.
And that was the beginning of the journey. Like, it literally just started 16 years ago.
If this is resonating with anybody out there and they want to call in, feel free to call in at 888-627-6008. We have Dr. Pitts here, the author of a new book that's available on Amazon right now, and I highly recommend it. And then after you read it, go and post a review for her about your feelings, because those reviews are so hard to get, Dr. Pitts, I tell you what.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
Queen Within, Becoming the Woman God Intended. Make sure you pick that up this week, and I promise you, you're going to enjoy it. So when you mentioned that your husband, your son's father, recognized the queen that was in you, you still kind of let that relationship fall away because of your lack of self-esteem?
I did, I just want to clarify, because it was one of the adverse experiences. The father of my child was not who I married. I was engaged. Yeah, I was engaged to marry him, but as I said, I destroyed that relationship, so I never married him.
Okay.
The person that I did, in fact, marry was another individual who, you know, had his own demons to battle, and he, over time, took me back to that place of the low opinion of myself, and he abused me and mistreated me, and just really, the abuse was so severe that it almost took me out of here. I've had a couple of run-ins, near-death experiences as a result of the domestic violence that I experienced in my marriage. So I just, I think that it's really important to clarify that, because my
right.
son's father was never abusive to me. To this day, he is one of my biggest fans, and he has just always been a breath of fresh air and a tremendous encouragement. But yeah, I just was not in a position. I wasn't whole. I wasn't mature. I wasn't responsible. I didn't appreciate the blessing that he was at the time, because I didn't think that I deserved a blessing.
Dr. Pitts, did you not knowing your biological father have on you not realizing the queen that you were? Because it's every girl's dream to be daddy's girl. And
right.
You mentioned that in your book. Do you think that had a lot to do with some of those things that you thought about yourself that wasn't so highly favored at the time, because you never had that from that you was always missing that connection that a girl can only have with her dad?
Right. It was everything. It is, you know, his absence from my life for many, many, many years fueled nothing but negative behavior. The one positive behavior, Dr. Greg, that remained constant for as long as I can remember is I've always been a scholar. I have just always loved education and learning. And for many years, well, not even many years, like literally even now, learning and submerging myself in all things educational was that piece. It was something that I felt like nobody could ever take from me, because so much had been taken from me. My innocence, my purity, my thought, just so much had been taken. So his absence was just, it was the straw that broke the camel's back from a very, 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 very young age. I remember at 5 years old, packing a bag and leaving, walking in the rain. I have no idea where I was going, but I was going to find my dad.
Wow.
I was going to find my dad. I was running away. I was going to find my dad, and, of course, you know, didn't get very far. But that's how big a deal it was. Like, I felt like, and even now, if I can just be further transparent, at 51, Dr. Greg, I feel like there's an entire part of my soul that's missing. It's
yeah.
like, and people who, you know, I've had people clown me over the years and make jokes and make light of the fact that I don't know my father. And I tell them, walk a mile in my shoes. You know who both your parents are. There's an entire part of my existence that I know not of. It's like missing yeah. an arm. I'm half Caribbean, but with the exception of living overseas for a year as a Fulbright scholar, I know nothing about my Caribbean heritage intimately. You know what I mean? I know, you know, what my experience was living in the Caribbean, but as far as my paternal lineage goes, there's an entire part of my existence that is missing. There is a void there that it's just there.
Wow.
It is just absolutely positively there. And, you know, do I look like him? Do I act like him? My mom says I do. She says
yeah.
that, you know, it's amazing to her that he's never been a part of my life, and I act just like him. I'm like, oh, okay.
Fascinating story. You're listening to Dr. Lauren Pitts, the author of an awesome book called The Queen Within, Becoming the Woman God Intended. When we come on the other side of the break, we'll have another segment with her, and I'm going to find out more about her loneliness, her fear of failure, and how she eventually overcame that and now helping thousands of people weekly on her own radio show. So we'll be back right after this break.
HCI Publishing, that brought you the international bestsellers A Child Called It and the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, comes the latest book by Dr. Gregory Williams, Shattered by the Darkness. This book describes the horrific abuse that Dr. Williams suffered at the hands of his father for over 12 years and the damaging effect of keeping everything silent about that abuse for 30 years. If you're looking for that book that you can't put down, then pick up a copy of Shattered by the Darkness by Dr. Gregory Williams at all Barnes & Noble stores, Amazon, and Books A Million. Now, back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams.
Thank you, Douglas. We are live in beautiful Houston, Texas, and I have one of my awesome friends online with us and been our guest the whole hour, Dr. Lauren Pitts, the author of The Queen Within, Becoming the Woman God Intended, and you can get that right now on Amazon, and I highly recommend that. And Dr. Pitts, as I was rereading the book this afternoon, scanning through it to make sure I didn't miss anything, and I'm sure I did because I'm more of a speed reader than I am to read every word. Yeah, I noticed that a couple times you mentioned, and just to clarify for my own purpose, that did you literally take a 2-year break and then come back to write it? It was almost like, it seemed like in one of the paragraphs you said, well, it's been 2 years, and now I'm back to, how long did it take you to write your autobiography?
It took me a little over 14 years. I started writing it in March of 2003 when I was residing in Tallahassee, Florida, and I actually put the... Well, I actually put what I thought was the finishing touches on it while I was living in Barbados, 2014-2015. But then when I came back from the year in Barbados, I was talking to a colleague of mine down in Jacksonville, Florida, and she said, Lauren, you know, so much has changed. You really should go back and, you know, reread and see which you can tweak and add because you've learned so many more lessons since then. And that's where that chapter, one of the toughest lessons learned or whatever it was I called it, came in, because I hadn't highlighted some of the things that had occurred in my life that set me back, that set me back emotionally, that set me back spiritually, that set me back financially. And I had taken just a two-year break because life was happening to me in such a way that I couldn't think straight.
Do you think that after
could
you
not think straight?
Yeah, after you wrote this, and it's been out for what, mm-hmm. a couple months?
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't you wish now you could go back and put more chapters at the end? At least that's what I did with my book. It's like, oh man,
I just had that conversation with somebody, and I said, I was telling my barber this morning. I said, I think there's going to be another edition with more chapters, or either there will be a sequel to it, because even since, it went to publication, there's just so much that is going on internally. There's so very much that's going on, and people need to know that they're not alone. People need to know that there are other people that are suffering from the same ills of life. And for me, I count it a blessing, that God has made me as resilient as I am. And I recognize, particularly in my role as a therapist, Dr. Greg, people aren't as resilient as we are. People wake up every day hopeless and helpless and defeated, and they look at us and they think, they see where we are now and don't realize that we have a story. They don't realize that we've gone through anything at all.
That's why they see the alphabet behind our name. Yeah, right.
And they're like,
I mean, that's the reason this show is called Breaking the Silence, because I think that's because my first book, this Shattered by the Darkness, that's been out it's been over a year, but just was republished. It released this February. I already working on
Phenomenal,
the second book.
By the way, bless me.
thank you. But it's like. Mm-hmm. There's so much I have learned just when I broke my own silence, and the mm-hmm, advancement mm-hmm. of my healing has thousand-fold sped up when I actually started helping people. And you have a line in the book. Yeah. I almost promise it's in there. You tell me if it's not. But you said, hurt mm-hmm. people hurt people, right?
Mm-hmm.
Don't you feel that healed people want to heal people?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yes.
And that's what it's like. That's my mantra, turning the adversities of my life into opportunities for other people. Like, I feel like if I don't help other people to heal, I feel like everything that's happened has defeated me.
Yeah.
And I'm just too stubborn to be defeated. So it's
that's
like,
great.
You know what? Well, how can I keep winning despite all of the adversity, despite all the trials and the tribulations and the challenges associated with life happening to me in some of the ways that it has, and oh, by the way, still does, I help other people heal. There's always somebody out there that is far worse off than I could have ever possibly imagined, and I make it my business to try to be a blessing and encouragement to everybody that I come into contact with in some way, shape, form, or fashion.
If there's someone listening right now on this program that is experiencing loneliness, that's mm-hmm. experiencing failure that has happened over and over and over, it seems like they just cannot get out of mm-hmm. the ditch of failure. They think they're that black sheep in their family, and it's just the weight has mm-hmm. almost got them down. Dr. Pitts, if mm-hmm. they were sitting in front of you alone in your office, what would be the best piece of advice that you can give someone that's listening that needs to hear your next few sentences? What would that be for them?
It would be exactly what you said, to get in front of someone, to make the decision to deliberately and intentionally stop suffering in silence. You cannot walk around bottled up with all of this toxicity of life eating you up from the inside and out. It tackles your mind. It tackles your body. It adversely affects the quality of your life. There are more people out there that are going through what you're going through than you realize, and there are plenty of us that have endured some of the things that you've endured, far less, far worse, but you're not alone. Please don't believe that lie. It's a lie.
It is
absolutely, positively a lie straight from the pits of hell. You are not alone, and there are those of us that you have access to that want to help you, that are available to help you, that will help you, but we need you to be willing to be helped. You don't have to feel helpless. You don't have to feel hopeless. You don't have to feel defeated. There is help available to you, and Dr. Greg is accessible. I'm accessible. You can reach out to us if we're not in your area. Certainly, we have an endless list of resources that we can connect you with that can get you the additional help, hope, and support that you need to be a healthier you.
Wow, that's awesome, and I know they will play my literal cell phone number at the end of the program tonight. And when I was on a show, I believe out of Quebec, at 6 o'clock Thursday evening, it was an hour before I was on with you Thursday night. A lady called in and was hurting and in pain, and I have been talking to her via internet. Up in Canada, back and forth, sending her things. And, you know, there's people out there that want to help. And
absolutely.
That's just so important, so important. You had a line in your book also that about self-esteem, because I know self-esteem is something that I deal with every day, and maybe I need a counseling session with you and you can help me with it. But you had
Dr. Greg, there's days that I still struggle with self-esteem stuff too. It's not resolved. It's a work in progress every day.
It is
it
for
really
me,
is.
I know. But the question that you ask yourself in your book is, I think, very powerful. If I met myself somewhere, would I want to have me as a friend? Expound on that, because I think there's a lot of meat on that bone right there.
You know, again, because I had embraced this internal narrative of how awful a human being I was, and Dr. Greg, I've made so very many mistakes, and I've hurt so many people along the way. As I began my healing process, I had to get down to the nitty-gritty and really start asking myself the hard conversations. And not only did I have to ask myself the hard conversations, Dr. Greg, I had to, as I, you know, in the 12 steps, you're making amends. And in order for me to be able to make amends and to repair some of the relationships that I had damaged, I had to be courageous enough to ask some of the people that I had hurt what they really felt about me. And what that prompted me to do was ask myself that question, because the reality of it was, there were some ugly things that I had to be mature enough and courageous enough to hear, because I had done the deed, you know what I mean? So I had to take ownership and responsibility for the pain that I had inflicted upon people, many of which I professed to love and care about, but my behavior suggested that I didn't. Why? Because hurting people hurt people. So asking myself that question, for me, was a way to be accountable. It was a way for me to be open and honest and transparent with myself, because at the end of the day, Dr. Greg, if I can't stand myself, why on earth would I think that anybody else would want to be bothered with me? So I had to get to that place. Yeah, I had to get to that place where I was willing to ask myself the hard questions and be honest about the answers. And in those areas where I was failing miserably, because there were many areas, the areas where I was failing miserably and the areas where I needed serious work to be a better me so that I would want to be okay with me, that's where it started. It started with the self-check. And even now, periodically, I will reach out to people that I trust, not folk that are just looking, to put me in front of a firing squad. But I ask, mature, responsible, healthy individuals, what do you think about me? What are my work-ons? How can I be a better me? How can I be a better mom? I'll ask my son. How can I be a better daughter? I'll ask my mom and my stepdad. How can I be a better sister? How can I be a better professional? And be mature enough, Dr. Greg, and responsible enough to actively listen.
Right.
And, oh, by the way, reflectively listen and not be so quick, as you were saying at the beginning of the show, right, to hold myself accountable for my response, to be willing to, as one of my professors said in my master's program many years ago, to sit in my ick.
Sit in it
for a minute and let it marinate and resonate, because it's going to be instrumental if you allow it to resonate in helping you to transform into a better you. But if
Fantastic.
You're not willing to have those developmental conversations, guess what? You're never going to grow.
That's right.
And I wanted to grow. I desperately wanted to be a better me.
We're down to the last minute. I just tell you what, it has been a joy to have you on here this evening. I want everybody to get on Amazon right now and pick up this book, The Queen Within, Becoming the Woman God Intended. And Dr. Pitts, thank you for spending the hour with me. God bless you on this book. And may it just reach hundreds and thousands of people in the next year. Make all those lists that you're praying about making in the next few months. Thank you for joining me tonight.
Thank you,
I appreciate
Dr. Greg.
It.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
And we'll be talking very, very soon. God bless you, Dr. Pitts. You know, before we close tonight, I just want to let you know, no matter what you're going through, and I'm sure Dr. Pitts would agree, no matter what you're into right now, there is always hope. Continue to believe there's always hope. Be gentle to yourself. Take care of yourself and always reach for hope. Join me next week, 8 p.m. Central, for another edition of Breaking the Silence. Thank you so much for joining me tonight. I hope you learned something that just drew you closer to be able to get the help that you need to break your own personal silence. Have an awesome week this coming week. God bless you.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1. For the next episode of Breaking the Silence.